We are so afraid of our fears. I mean, I think it's one of the main problems in society. Everyone is afraid of their fears, and we're afraid of our pain. And so what do? We lock it away. We trap it inside of us. And of course, as you've talked about on the podcast, that actually becomes sickness.
Hi, everyone. Drew Perrott here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. In today's episode, we have my dear friend Adam, who goes by the pen name and the stage name InQ, here to talk about his new book, Inquire Within. If you care about the topic of finding your passion and finding your voice in life, this episode is a must. Stay tuned for a fascinating conversation. Welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast, where we dive deep into the topics of neuroplasticity, epigenetics, mindfulness, functional medicine, and mindset. I'm your host, Drew Perrott, and each week my team and I bring on a new guest who we think can help you improve your brain health, feel better, and most importantly, live more. This week's guest is award-winning poet, modern-day philosopher. I added that into your bio.
Thank you.
And multi-platinum songwriter, Adam Schmalholz, who goes also by the pen name InQ. A few things about my dear friend InQ. He's one of Oprah's Super Soul 100 list members, which is a list of the world's most influential thought leaders. His groundbreaking performances, including selling out one of the largest one-man poetry shows in U.S. history, which I'm proud to say that I was a part of in the audience. I wasn't on stage, but I was in the audience. He's been featured on Forbes, Annie, and my personal favorite HBO Deaf Poetry Jam. He's inspired audiences around the world through his live performances and storytelling workshops. Many of his recent poetry videos have gone viral and have a total of more than 70 million views combined. Adam, welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate you having me, man.
It's an honor to have you here, brother. I feel like having you here is quintessential, the whole reason that I started the podcast, which is, you know, this podcast is about health, but it's about so much more than just physical health. It's about mental health, our vision of life, who we are, breaking through ideas and notions and thinking about the meaning that we attribute to things. And most importantly, interviewing people that I truly look up to. And I've had the pleasure of being your friend for many years now through the Summit community. And I want to thank you for coming on here and talking about your new book.
Yes.
Which is out. InQ, right? InQ, Inquire Within. Mm-hmm. And jumping into some of the themes that are there. But to give the audience a little bit of a taste, I actually would love you to start off with one of my favorite poems, a work of yours called Learned Fear.
Absolutely. First of all, though, I just want to say thank you very much for having me. The feeling is mutual. I have mutual admiration for you. And I'm so proud that you've set up this environment for people to explore complex and simple ideas about how to evolve, you know, personally and collectively.
Thank you, my friend.
Learned fear. Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core, receiving since your youth, when your choices weren't even yours, perceiving was the proof. But reality has many doors, so why are we still fighting other people's wars? Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating, repeating, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core. And you can't tell the difference because it sounds the same. But trust me when I tell you, most of what you think is from somebody else's brain. They have us trained, shackled by imaginary chains, imaginary rules for imaginary games, but they don't know the reasons either. So where should we place the blame? And who is they anyway when we're all the same? Our parents had parents, and their parents had parents. Apparently it hurts to see, so I'll be transparent. The world is so much bigger than your insecurities. And they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority. The world is so much bigger than your culture or community, and they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority, because if it's all a story, then nobody else can tell it for me. Since I'm always transforming, I defy a category. When you do the same thing the same way, it's habit forming. But nothing in this land of woman and man is mandatory. It's all just transitory. Our world's a laboratory. Experimenting on today can change tomorrow morning. And since matter is mostly empty space, we're in a sea of consciousness where the boundaries are erased. So I stared at my reflection until I couldn't see my face. Then I picked myself and put the flowers in an empty vase. If you came for validation, then you're in the wrong place. The only certain satisfaction is becoming what you've chased. And there's no running from the inner voice. So it's important that you choose, but it's more important that you know you have a choice. You have a choice. Are you living someone else's life? You have a voice. Does it haunt you in the dead of night? Would you fly if you weren't convinced to be afraid of heights? And who convinced you anyway? They had no fucking right. Right? No one can dim your light. You shine within so bright that you could blind the sun from sight and scare it back into the night. No one can dim your light. I said it twice because you're greater than the circumstances that surround your perfect life. You're not your nature or your nurture. You're a prototype. And if you hone it right, eventually you'll hack your satellite. A little to the left, a little to the right. Just right. At first, it's nothing. The nothing turns into a whisper. Turn the dial and it gets crisper in your transistor. Wait a while and the whisper turns into a scream. It overwhelms your system and you don't know what it means. But pump the volume up and it can tell you all your dreams. Till pretty soon, it's the only voice you'll ever need. Now all you have to do is listen when you want to lead. Your fear disintegrates when you decide to stop and breathe. It's your authentic voice. And no matter where you go, it never leaves. And that's God, no matter what religion you believe. I'm starting my own religion, and everyone is welcome. But nobody can join. If you did, you'd miss the point.
Beautiful, man.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Give me the director's cut on that poem. Where were you in life? And what were some of the circumstances combined or individually that led up to those beautiful words?
Thank you. I was actually in Greece, and I don't remember specifically where I was. Maybe it was Santorini, but I do remember I was like sitting in front of the ocean. And it was just this endless blue sea. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, the world is so much bigger than my insecurities. And that was really where the poem started. It was this idea that, you know, everything I carry around with me is inside of me. And no matter where I go, there I am. But, you know, the world that I was brought up in is so small in comparison to the world that exists. And it's so much bigger than our cultures or our communities, and that I get to choose how many of these experiences I want to collect, and what I bring into my experience will change who I am in the world. And that the things that I've learned are oftentimes stopping me from seeing what's possible, and that they're not even my fears. You know, they were taught. And not even that I was taking that personally, by the way, because people teach what they know, you know, and our parents' circumstances created who they are. And then, of course, they're going to pass that down to us consciously or unconsciously because it's just a part of the game. But then I think it's our responsibility to own that, to not victimize where we came from, you know, within ourselves, to empower ourselves and to move beyond those ideologies that we might be unaware of to be able to write our own story. So anytime I'm writing, I basically will always start in a place where I'm thinking of something that either inspires me or moves me or annoys me. And if I start in a place that's true, the rest of the poem will almost write itself if I give it time and space. And so this was one of those situations where I had something that moved me. And as I navigate life, I'm always paying attention to those things. Like, I'm always kind of aware on the back burner, what is it that stands out in this moment? Because I know that if I take a note of what that thing is, then it can become a poem without any effort, you know?
You shared something, which is that in the poem, I'll paraphrase here because I don't have it in front of me. The thoughts in our brain are not always our own.
Yeah.
And then you talked about insecurities.
Yeah.
And a lot of the insecurities in our life, in a beautiful way, both they shape these fears that sometimes drive us away from the things that we want to do, but they also shape our strengths sometimes too.
For sure.
The things that we get good at in life.
Yeah.
When you think about your life growing up and becoming the man you are today, what were some of the couple insecurities that you think made you who you are, both in both of those ways?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with you. You know, any superpower is the kryptonite and vice versa.
Batman.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
He's afraid of bats and he uses that.
Exactly.
His deepest fear is bats and uses that as his superhero strength, embraces it, and then can become so much bigger than his fears.
Exactly. And if you look at society in general, which is kind of like veering off from your question, but we are so afraid of our fears. I mean, I think it's one of the main problems in society. Everyone is afraid of their fears and we're afraid of our pain. And so what do? We lock it away. We trap it inside of us. And of course, as you've talked about on the podcast, that actually becomes a sickness in many ways. It can become something that transforms to your body yelling at you that you're not doing something right. You're not actually like releasing these things. So I think it's not about ignoring or distracting yourself from these negative things. It's about alchemizing them. And alchemy is about unconditional love. So it's about looking those, you know, sides of yourself that you think are shadow sides in the face with courage and actually not arguing against them, but like accepting them and loving them and integrating them. And then in the integration, you have the alchemy. And not operating from that place that you perceive as negative, not creating more of that, but, you know, welcoming that into your life rather than pushing it away. Because who I am is directly based on everything that I experienced. I can't pick and choose. You know, I can't say, oh, these are the good things and these are the things that I want people to see. I mean, it's all a part of who I am. If I think of my specific history, you know, I was raised by a single mother who's a school teacher. My father was not around. And I talk about that in the book, Inquire Within, in a poem called Father Time, which kind of explores what it was like for me to, you know, grow up without a man in the house. And they were never married. So it was complicated to say the least. And I didn't meet him until I was 15 years old. And, you know, I have two brothers and two sisters that, you know, I've never met on his side. And I was actually like a secret to them, you know, like they didn't know that I existed until 15. So there's a lot, you know, that's behind this story. And it very much affected, you know, how I was in the world. I think I externalized a lot of my identity because of that. But it also made me internalize who I thought I was supposed to be. And I explored so many questions, you know, in that loneliness that I was going through and that kind of isolation. And I think that that's made me the writer that I am. And it's made me the person that I am. And I have a lot of empathy for other people because of kind of what I went through and how I came out on the other side.
Where did the gift of words and exploring words and putting them together, how did that first start in your journey?
So did Did I answer your question, by the way?
Absolutely.
Sometimes I feel like I just go.
Beyond answer the question.
Okay, cool. So I started out rapping when I was in high school. And I absolutely loved it. It was a freestyle originally that kind of brought me to hip hop because it was my form of meditation at the time. You know, when you're freestyling, you can't think of anything else but the next word.
You have to be so present in the moment.
So present, man. You know, and there was no place in my life where I felt present at the time. So it really put me in a zone where I was like able to express the unconsciousness, you know, the anger, the pain, the love. And it was all coming out through these freestyles. And then I started writing and I was able to like strategize a little more about what I wanted to say. So that was like a big part of my childhood. And then when I was 19, I wound up in an open mic for poets in Los Angeles called the Poetry Lounge. And it turned out to be the biggest open mic in the country. We got 350 people every single week. So it was like the West Coast equivalent to the New Eurekan in New York. And it was such a revelation, man, to join this community, to come in and to watch people be celebrated for their vulnerability. It was unbelievable, man. Like vulnerability was strength in the community, so people would get up and they would share something that was true to them. And the whole audience would respond like a rap battle. Like, oh, you know. And so I was like, wow, that's incredible that someone can get up and say something that's real and that's vulnerable and dig deeper into themselves and have that type of celebration, which I think goes back to the alchemy of what we were talking about earlier, because it's a communal alchemy. It's people getting up and sharing things that they might be ashamed of and then being celebrated for mirroring the human experience back onto the audience.
Which often happens when we find our tribe. Was that your first real experience of sort of finding a tribe outside of your family?
I mean, I had my tribe in high school, I will say that, because, you know, I had my in-school tribe and I had my out-school tribe, you know, and both of them were very different groups of people, but it was the first time that I felt like I had an artistic tribe, you know, a creative tribe. And they really were, you know, a second family and still are, you know. And I never left, man. I went every Tuesday night. I was doing my, you know, raps a cappella. And I didn't even consider myself a poet. And then over time, as life takes on its own path, which it does, you know, if you follow your enthusiasm, you know, and you follow the path will lead the way, you know? So I wound up waking up one day and realizing I was more of a poet than an MC. And then I had a different journey after that, you know?
You know, you identify as a poet, but a big part of your message, both through the book, as well as just you being who you are and performing at different places, and you've even said this before on past podcasts, is that you actually feel that everybody's a poet.
100%.
What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I think everybody's an artist. You know, I think that there's this like very confined definition of what an artist is. And I think that it actually does a disservice to people and to art in general. I mean, art is play. You know, what does a musician do? They go play, you know, or actors put on a play. And as kids, we are artists. We're all, you know, imaginative and we're playing. And then, you know, we become adults and we get kind of, you know, stuck in whatever routines we've created for ourselves. And I think that that stops us from seeing that we can still play in life and that our lives are our greatest art. I mean, I have a poem in the book called Creation, and it's like about the highest form of creation. You know, two artists coming together to make a human being is the concept. You know, that we are all like, you know, art that is continuing to create in real time. And if we look at our lives like that, we can find excitement in any genre, including poetry. And poetry specifically is about storytelling. And we're all storytellers. We're storytellers internally and externally all day long. So the difference between that and writing a poem, to me, isn't about rules. It's about intention. If you sit down and you intend to write a poem, you're writing a fucking poem. You know, who's to say that that's not true, you know? Someone who, like, tries to confine art by rules. So, you know, if you have something that you want to express, try expressing it through a poem, or try expressing it through dance, or try expressing it through any art form, or look at something that you don't consider an art form and try kind of the perspective of it being an art form and see how it changes the process of you doing it.
What I love about the book, and also that statement that everybody's a poet, is that you are also helping us think like a poet. So I wrote down two things that I feel like from seeing your performances and interacting with your work and reading your material, I feel like part of what you've helped me do, and by the way, you teach people this in like workshops around the country and stuff. I've not had the chance to go to one, but I feel like part of that training of a poet's mind is that you interact with life. So separate from poetry, you see what happens, but then you're also thinking about what meaning you want to give to the thing that you just experienced.
Yeah.
I feel like that's part of what I've learned from you as a friend of thinking like a poet in my everyday life.
Thank you, man.
Absolutely. Because I think the time that when there's not the separation between our thoughts and the circumstances, we just think that what we think is the way that it is.
Right.
But I feel like as a poet, you're actively sort of parsing it down, looking at it different ways, looking at it from, you know, your point of view, the other person's point of view, the situation, the culmination, the micro, the macro, and then you end up with this piece that represents a lot of different layers. And when somebody asked me the other day, they said, oh, what podcast do you have this week? And I was telling them about your work. They weren't familiar with you. And they said, oh, well, what is the interview going to be about? And I said, Adam and his work is really has like two core missions. It's using, I wrote this down because this was a thought that I had with them. You use your words to help other people find their words and the meaning that they're giving to those words. And you also are here to remind us that the answers that we seek for our life are already within us.
That's, first of all, thank you for saying that, because that helps reflect it back to me again. And look, I'm only writing to remind myself, you know, whatever it is that I'm exploring, I don't like strategize my inspiration. I don't even really have a destination when I'm writing. I just kind of had to have a journey, you know? So even the process of writing Inquire Within was so fascinating for me. And I'll piggyback on what you're saying. You know, I don't sit down and say, I want to say this specific thing. I just start in that place where I'm inspired or moved or annoyed. And then it takes on a life of its own. So when I first started to do this book, I mean, a lot of the material had already been written, and I kind of thought it was going to be an easy process, which was absolutely ridiculous. You know, writing a book, no matter what the situation, it's going to be a marathon. But one of the amazing things that came out of this for me was I finally collected all of these pieces that I had written for the last 15 years with all of these new pieces that I was creating for the book, and I put them in one place and I was able to look at them. And for the first time ever, I finally kind of realized what I've been trying to say. And that's why it's interesting to have you reflect that back to me, because I'm not sure that I specifically knew that all of these years. I just knew that I was exploring these concepts and these emotions and these stories through my work. But what I ultimately realized in getting them all in one place, I mean, the book is broken up, Inquire Within, Inhale, and Exhale. Those are the two sections. And Inhale is personal poems, and it's my own kind of hero's journey told through poetry. And then Exhale is kind of the social and political, and how if we change ourselves, we can then in turn change the world. And in seeing all of this stuff in one place, I did realize what you said, which is that, you know, we're taught as kids to validate ourselves externally. You know, we look outside of ourselves for the answers, and we're literally trained to do this because that's what consumerism is about. You know, it's like, I don't feel this way, I go buy this. You know, I mean, people have been talking about these concepts a lot lately, and I'm really glad, because we shouldn't be externalizing who we are. It's an internal process to find who you are. And it's a constant process. And so, you know, if I don't know something, I look on Google, you know, or I listen to a podcast, or I ask a friend, you know, and all of these things are amazing, amazing tools to finding something out. But there's also just being quiet, you know, and sitting by yourself and allowing that internal voice to rise up within you. And all of the noise that's around us constantly stops us from being able to hear that one true voice. natural voice is, you know, your passion. It's your enthusiasm. It's the compass that tells you whether to go right or left, you know? And no one can tell you that. Only you will know. And so this is Inquire Within the book. It's that I had to inquire within myself to write the book. And it's that the person that reads the book has to inquire within themselves, because the answers aren't in the book. It's just a reflection back onto the person that's reading it to find whatever they need to move forward in their lives.
Part of the theme of what you're talking about is finding your own voice and the reflection for the audience of finding their own voice. Take us back to your story, your hero's journey. You found this tribe, you found this group of people, this poets group that would meet up, spoken word, and you were doing your performances. What were the experiences that you had to play and come up with this unique style that you have, which is like part like rap and hip hop, part like deep philosophy, stoicism, and a little bit of other stuff mixed in between? What were the steps you went through in your journey that led to the contribution of you playing and over time finding your voice?
Well, so to your point, I think I'm still finding my voice. And it is a never-ending process because my voice is always changing.
So I want to pause there for one second.
Yeah, of course.
I hear this all the time. People say, I can't start yet. I haven't found my voice.
Oh, got it.
I can't do this. And what you're saying is an important point. You're saying, I'm still finding my voice.
Hell yeah.
But that doesn't stop you from putting out the work.
I mean, no. And it shouldn't stop anyone from expressing themselves. How are you going to find something if you're never searching for it? You can't intellectualize art. You have to experience it, you know, as somebody who's in the audience and as someone who's performing, you know, in any genre. You know, I think that you can like look at, you know, what it is you want to say and what type of thing, or you can be taught things, you can go to school and people can teach you art. But the most valuable experience in anything is doing it, you know. So I hope that people don't wait to find their voice in order to find their fucking voice. I mean, use your voice and you will figure out what you want to say. You know?
Absolutely. I think that's an important point. You know, there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are not only interested in wellness and mental health and these themes that we talk about, but they're actually doing it in the world. They're a coach, they're a doctor, they're a this, a that, they're a writer, they're a musician, they're a teacher, and they think that they have, and they know that they have things that they want to say. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to share their gifts with the world, but they feel they have to arrive before they get started.
Yeah.
Because their past is too messy. This didn't happen. This isn't perfect. This situation isn't there. And once I finally get it all together, then I'll get started.
It will never happen. You'll never get it all together. There is no together. There's nothing out there. There's just here. It's just you and me sitting in a room right now, and whoever's listening to this in the future, that's all there is. You know, and it's the same moment too. I mean, who's to say that there's here and there's there? I know that's like extremely out there, but you know, this idea that there's gonna be some point that you'll reach when you'll have it all together is an absolute illusion. So, you know, there's nothing to wait for. There's only now. And what are you gonna do with it? And to be honest, man, I'm 41 years old. Like, and I feel like my life is just beginning. I don't know what I expected that I would feel like at this stage in my life, or who I would be. But I know that it's, you know, I am certainly not living up to the expectations that I had at that point. You know, I don't even remember what those expectations were, but I'm something different and it's so much more beautiful, you know, and it's still unfolding. This woman came up to my girlfriend and I at the airport two nights ago, and she was like, you know, I just want to stop. And it was actually very sweet. She was like, you're really beautiful, to my girlfriend. And we were like, oh, that's really nice of you. And she seemed really sad, actually. And so, you know, we kind of like interacted with her for a second, and she said, you know, I used to be young and beautiful like you. And my girlfriend was like, you're really beautiful now, you know? And she was like, no. And I could tell she was going through something specifically. And so we like wished her well, wished her a happy new year. And she walked off and we talked about it for a moment. And we both felt empathy for her because, you know, and I don't know the circumstances of what this woman was going through, but what I know is that we both thought she was really beautiful. And we both thought that her life seemed like it was filled with possibility. But for whatever reason, she felt like the circumstances of her life in that moment were like a cage. And she was reminiscing through my girlfriend on another time. And the thing is like, all due respect, but I don't want to live like that. I mean, you know, I was getting a haircut the other day and I was looking at myself in the mirror and I was like, oh, I'm just one haircut closer to dying. You know, we're on a fucking train and it's moving and it doesn't matter what you do on the train. The train is going in the same direction and it's all going to crash one day and we don't know when it's going to crash. And what do you want to do with your time while you're here? If I make it to 70, 80, 90, I'm curious what I'll be wearing. What will I be wearing in my 70s? You know, will I want to pick up a language? You know, why do we think that we reach a certain point in our lives and all of a sudden the excitement, the possibility, the surprise is supposed to end? It's because we stop playing. We start overly controlling our lives to the point where everything is so predictable that it's not even fun anymore. But for me, I'm 41 years old. I feel like my life is just getting started and I'm curious what's going to come next, you know?
I think about this woman in the airport and my heart just goes out to her.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere she found evidence for something. And it reminds me of another favorite poem of yours, which is called Evidence.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to share that with our audience here, because in that moment, if I could have paused time and have you in the loudspeakers of the airport play something for her, to support her and be there for her, it'd be this poem. So I'd love you to share that with our audience.
Evidence. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. Starve your pain, find your ego. Starve your ego, find your beast. Starve your beast, find your truth. Find your truth, find your peace. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. Starve your pain, find your ego. Starve your ego, find your beast. Starve your beast, find your truth. Find your truth, find your peace. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. You will always find the evidence for what you choose to believe. So if you don't like your story, don't believe it, then leave.
Beautiful, man.
Thank you.
I posted on Instagram this morning. I tagged you. I think you commented
in. I did. Thank you for that.
And I wrote this post, and I'll paraphrase here because I don't have it in front of me. Your brain is like a detective. It's always looking for evidence to prove its point.
For sure.
So if you feel lack, if you feel you're not enough, your brain will go on the hunt like a detective looking to back up that story. And I shared that specifically because I think in this day and age of consumption, where consumption is just a lot easier, it's a lot easier. There's a lot of beautiful things that have come from technology, social media, all the advances that we have. But I think that it's a pretty clear point to say that it's easier to consume everything this day and age in our society, food, news, information, anything. That consumption puts us in a place where if we're not always aware of what our past beliefs are or what state of mind we're entering into a situation, people pop on social media, they'll just start aimlessly scrolling, and then you could see a photo of your friend who just got engaged, let's say, mm-hmm. for instance, or who bought the, you know, house of their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what you believe and what you're walking into with that, there will be a situation of like, wow, I'm so surrounded by such incredible friends. Look at another friend of mine that's hit an amazing milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Or many other times, and this is where social media gets a lot of criticism, but is it really social media is the question. It's, shoot, that person has just bought a house. I haven't. I'm this age. Am I supposed to be further along in life than I am?
Yeah.
Why don't I have things? It's such a cycle, but it really comes back to looking at that story and what you believe.
Mm, totally. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have a thing in the book where I talk about ideas and ideologies. And it was a story because I was talking to my therapist about the differences between ideas and ideologies. And he was saying that he believes that ideas are tools that you can use in your life that will change as your truth and your experience changes. But ideologies are things that you have to force everything in your life into the frame of. Otherwise, you will lose control over that ideology and hence that part of your life, because your ideologies are your identity. And you don't want to lose control over your identity. And then part of you is dying, right? So you have to hold on to that thing. So as I was leaving his office, I was like, oh man, you know, I use way too many ideologies. I'm going to start to like think about like the ones that are conscious and the ones that are unconscious, if I can find them. And from now on, I'm only going to use ideas. And then I said it out loud as like a declaration of the universe. I was like walking to my car. I was like, from now on, I'm only going to use ideas. And then I was like, shit, I just created a new ideology. And so I think it's an interesting concept to think about the differences between ideas and ideologies. You know, finding the ways that we attach identity to our ideas and turn them into ideologies.
Can you think of, you know, a recent ideology that you've had to do some work on? Recent could be last few years.
Mm-hmm.
That you've had to reflect on and think on, and whether life led it to you or you led it to yourself or the combination of both, that you had to unpack and sort of massage and say, okay, is this really serving me and do I need this anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, through the book, I explore, you know, those overall concepts of, I think self-worth is definitely a big one. And I think I hide self-worth issues even behind those strengths that I have, which goes back to your initial point of, you know, the superpower and the kryptonite, because you're never going to be who you are without everything you've experienced. And maybe some of those self-worth issues that came from my father or the way that I was raised, you know, started to seep into how I viewed the world. And, you know, in defense of that, I created all of these amazing, you know, superpowers that I have. But then at a certain point, when you realize that, you have to kind of acknowledge, all right, like, are these tools that I'm using or are my tools using me? And if you don't know the difference between the two of those things, then you have to spend some time sifting through it so you can make sure that wherever you're speaking from is a place of real authenticity, not a trick to be validated, you know, in a new way to overcome this internal record that's playing the lack of self-worth. And I think, you know, part of that process is the alchemy process that we discussed earlier, which is like, I'm not going to be able to like fight against my self-worth issues. I mean, it literally will not work, you know? But what I can do is embrace them. I can own them. I can love them. And then in doing that, I can integrate them. And then in doing that, I can alchemize them so that I don't operate from that place and I can connect to the world and be in reality rather than my projection of reality, which continues to create that same cycle over and over again.
You know, when you share that, one of the things that I think about is that recently I've been doing a lot of podcasts and going on other people's podcasts, talking about, people always ask me like, oh, can you come on and talk about brain health or functional medicine or this mm-hmm. or that? And I say, look, I'm passionate about those things, but really the thing that I'm most passionate about is friendship and community.
Mm.
I will come on and I'll talk about something that I think is more important than the food that we eat is who we surround ourselves with.
Sure.
Not that both can't be important at the same time. And recently somebody asked me, one of my friends, Rangan, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee from the UK, said, you know, where does this passion come from?
Mm.
I said, I know exactly where it comes from. It comes from when I was a kid, my family moved around a lot.
Mm.
And I was always the new kid.
Mm.
And I didn't fit in. And I didn't have friends. And I had to make friends from scratch. And I left with that feeling, especially a couple key points where I moved at different stages in life. As my dad, you know, would get different, you know, rise up the corporate ladder and all the stuff that he was doing. And he's just trying to create a better life for his family,
right.
You know, the immigrant hustle.
Right.
And there was a couple, one key point was we moved to the state of Delaware, where I primarily grew up. And I interacted with, you know, just a group of kids that—
How old are you at this point?
At that point, I'm probably about, let's say, like 9 years old.
Okay.
Right? And it was just a very hostile environment.
Right.
You know, everybody in our neighborhood was white. They'd never really seen a brown person.
Hmm.
People in the state, in the particular area that we lived, it's either you were black or you were white. And here I am, this brown guy coming in. I look different. I'm, you know, it's just, things are just different. And kids are just being kids. Even if you're the same race, color, whatever, you'll get picked on in some direction or another.
Yeah, and kids are fucking assholes. But, you know, go ahead.
So the conclusion of the story is that I can remember having a few early on experiences where I felt like, okay, people don't have your back.
Hmm.
And there's this phrase that I use today, which I'm always like saying to my friends and other people, I'm like, I got your back.
Hmm.
And the beauty of the kryptonite and the superpower in that story was there'd be periods in time in my life where I'd put so much effort and energy into other people, into other things, holding on to things because I was afraid of this loss.
Right.
Now, the beautiful part about it is that people say to me, you're a good friend, you're supportive, you go out of your way.
Hmm.
But I can see how when it goes unchecked in either direction, that story can play out into not being supportive for me.
So true.
But when I'm in the middle and aware of it and embracing it, yeah, you know, I have this past. I don't always feel like people have my back. That's why I'm a good friend. That's why I show up.
Yeah.
That's why I'm welcoming of people who are new. That's why I care about the topic. I can embrace that. And now I've found my voice inside of that journey.
Mm, I love that. First of all, you are a very, very good friend. I mean, I really mean that. I acknowledge that for whoever's listening, but I also just acknowledge it to you, man. You've been an unbelievable friend to me. Very supportive in many, many ways.
Oh, thank you, brother.
And so I honor that. And then hearing where it comes from is really fascinating to me, because hearing that you didn't feel like you had that for yourself, so you wanted to show up for other people like that, I think it's really beautiful. I think it says a lot about who you are, because you could have gone the opposite direction, right? You could have said, no one's showing up for me, fuck it, I'm not gonna show up for anyone else. And a lot of people do that. So I think it says a lot about who you are and how you chose to move through life. But once again, you get to a point of awareness and then, you know, am I getting used by my tools, or are my tools things that I can choose to use when I want to or not when I don't?
Have we gotten so identified with the pain that now we've gotten stuck?
Exactly. Even, by the way, if the pain is what created, you know, the success. You know, like, for example, for me, I'll speak on the fact that a lot of my writing came from obsession for a long time. I was obsessed. You know, at first it was just a way to express, and then it became a way to obsess, basically. And obsession actually can be an amazing fuel source to create from, but it's not sustainable. You know, you can't sustain, you know, creativity in a long term way on obsession. You have to find another more sustainable fuel source. And for me, that was love. But I wouldn't be who I am had I not gone through that stage. So it's like the awareness, and then it opens up to a new level of evolution, a new level of navigating with the world. So like for yourself, now that you know that, how do you operate differently? Is there any like specific way that your behavior has changed now that you've had that awareness?
Oh yeah, with that awareness, it's like I can do all the things within my boundaries that allow me to still be a great friend and supportive to the people that are in my community, my family, because I like to go above and beyond. It actually gives me fuel.
Mm.
I like to be there for people. Mm. My hobby, instead of watching Netflix, is I'd rather take a meeting with you and talk about your goals and dreams and what you're up to, and seeing how I actually like it. It's fun and it's enjoyable. And it's the awareness that when it stops being enjoyable, or I've gone a little too far, that it's okay to come back and say, no,
right,
I can't do this right now.
Right, for sure.
And not feel that me not being able to be there for somebody in that moment is a representation of me being a kid and feeling like I'm being picked on and I don't have people supportive of me.
For sure. And by the way, when you do say no and people just go, no worries, thank you so much for even considering. And they love you for you. They love you for saying yes and they love you for saying no. There's just like a little bit more air that's let out of the tire, you know? And we all have that, just like a little bit more to decompress and then to come into the world so we can connect in a deeper way.
And why I wanted to bring up that story and build upon what you were sharing is that, you know, you talk about that pain can be some of the biggest teachers in our life, to the degree that I'm pulling this quote, and please correct me if you know, I'm wrong. You were saying that, you know, the pain of your father, you know, going back to your story, his absence and in his presence was your biggest spiritual teacher.
Yeah.
So even for your own journey, that pain that sometimes we don't always want to talk about, that we don't want to embrace, is actually the thing that leads to, can lead to, if we don't get stuck in it and mm-hmm. fully identify with it, can be part of our awakening and growth as a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Give us the example, if you feel comfortable talking about it, it's inside the book, so I hope I'm not talking about anything that you don't want to talk about, but how is that real in the context of your father and the story that you were sharing with us?
I mean, I just wouldn't be who I am without having all the experiences with his absence in my life, you know, and having to figure out what a man is by myself, you know, or with my mom. I mean, my mom was an incredible, incredible mother. She really was. And everything that I am, you know, I owe to her. But there were things that I had to figure out on my own that she couldn't teach me. And I think that there was a part of me that always felt a little bit separate from the world because of that. I was always slightly like observing myself from the outside, looking in of what I was supposed to be like, because I didn't have an example, you know, that was close to me. And it wasn't only, you know, the fact that my dad wasn't around. I mean, I really had no mentors that were like male presence in my life that I felt close to. I didn't really like trust people like that. So a lot of what I went through was kind of like a lonely process of figuring out what it meant to be a man. And I, as I said, externalized that through music and television and, oh, this is what a person's supposed to be like, or this is what I'm supposed to act like. And so it was a long process, you know, to find myself, you know, and to listen to that voice that I was talking about that I kind of, you know, explore throughout the book. And then I think in his presence, I learned a lot because we were never really able to have a bond the way that I had always, I think, imagined when I was a kid. You know, I mean, I talk about that in the Father Time poem, that I used to like, you know, envision the fact that he was like an FBI agent or something, and that's why he couldn't be around when I was like 7 or 8. I remember I had this like deal with my mom that I could send him a card when I was like, I think, 8 years old. And I was like so excited to do this, you know, for a really long time. I'd been thinking about it. I'm going to send my dad a card because we had never had any contact, you know. And so I finally like have my birthday and I send him a Father's Day card, and it just came back, returned to sender. You know, he didn't respond or anything like that. And I would go out every single day to the mailbox and like wait, you know. And so I think I really, in many ways, shut down after that, you know. And there was a part of me that I didn't acknowledge or recognize. And I hid a lot of that anger and pain, you know, in other ways that were coming out in the world that really were at its core probably based on that feeling of rejection. But I couldn't even acknowledge that within myself. And then meeting him and having that experience of like getting to know who he was, not who I thought he was really, you know, another lesson in and of itself. But all of it was necessary. I mean, I don't feel like a victim to any of my circumstances. First of all, so many people have it so much worse than that. You know, if I'm even choosing a comparison point, but fuck the comparison point. Everybody's going through something, you know? And I feel like empowered by everything that I experienced. It's deepened who I am. You know, it's allowed me to feel. It's allowed me to think. It's allowed me to explore. And it's allowed me to connect. Because there's not many people that I meet, no matter what the circumstances of what they're going through, that I feel like I can't look deeply into their eyes and recognize that pain, or recognize their, you know, confusion, or recognize their search for peace of mind and peace of heart. And in that way, I can connect with them, and hopefully both of us can feel a little bit less alone through my art or through my conversation.
You know, we just had a doctor on the podcast, Dr. Tina Bryson, and she does a lot of work in the space of children and how to prepare their brains for the real world. And a big part of her message is on the theme of secure attachment. Mm-hmm. And that her theme that she was really bringing to the podcast was, even if a child goes through a challenging time, even if they go through something that's uncomfortable or some version of trauma, big T trauma or small T trauma, most importantly, it's about giving them the tools that they can add meaning to that. Mm. Well, even if they're an adult and this happened to them in the past, a big part of resilience and happiness, physical health, mental health, is giving people the tools that allow them to see and sort of self-soothe the traumas and the challenging situations they went through. Hmm. And that goes across the spectrum. I mean, some people are dealing with like really big stuff, and right, some people are dealing with like small things, as you just hinted to. Hmm. Besides your own inquiry, your own writing poems, putting it out there, what have been tools or books or things that you've gone through in life that have taught you how to give meaning through just anything that you go through?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I've been in therapy for years, and that has been extremely helpful for me. And there's still fucking shame around therapy. It's ridiculous that there would be shame around people exploring their stories with someone who is trained to help mirror back onto you what you're saying about your life so you can make better decisions to move forward. It's like having a coach for your life. Well, like there's coaches for sports. Why would there not, there's coaches for piano. Why would you not want a coach for your life? And why would you have to feel ashamed about that? It's so ridiculous, man. And I have done body work for years with an incredible woman named Rachel Putter, who basically sees where there's trapped energy and emotion in your body and helps to release it. And in that release, it is alchemized and you can be more in the world and more in reality, as we discussed earlier. That was a huge thing. Meditation was a huge thing. I learned how to meditate in Vedic and Ziva meditation from Emily Fletcher,
who's been a past guest on this podcast.
Absolutely love her. She taught me 4 years ago, and I literally have never missed a meditation. I've done twice a day for the 4 years, and it's been an absolute game changer. And, you know, I describe it as basically like, you know, a gym for letting go. You're letting go of your thoughts and emotions over and over again. You're practicing that. And then when you're in the world, it's more easy when you get triggered to let go of your thoughts and your emotions and return to what's actually happening. So you can respond to what's happening, not from your projection of what's happening, which will get you into trouble.
Which is not just the lows, but also identifying with the highs.
Exactly.
Believing in the hype when you do something great and you're amazing and you're doing this and that, or valuing somebody else's opinion of you because they put you in that pedestal. It's almost like praise and blame are both the same.
Exactly.
And meditation is a way to unplug from all that.
Exactly. Exactly. Also, by the way, and this is just like very logical, you know, there's people that look at meditation and they're still like, ah, whatever. You know, look, kids need naps. You ever been around a two-year-old who doesn't nap? They go fucking bananas, man. You know, so it's like, even at the simplest level, you're literally forcing yourself to take two naps a day, of course you're going to operate better in every single area of your life. You know, and I explore that in the book as well, like how meditation has kind of changed who I am and how I am, you know. And what's fun for me with this book, by the way, is that every single thing that I talk about and every single thing that I am wound up in the book in ways that even were surprising to me, you know. So, yeah, and then also reading is a really big one. Spending time with people that inspire me. You know, making sure that I'm around people that are looking at their lives solution-minded rather than problem-oriented, you know? I was just talking about this with a friend of mine the other day. I mean, there's three levels of, like, how you think about the world. There's problem-oriented, solution-minded, and then infinite possibility. I was problem-oriented for a really long time. And then through a lot of these practices I've been doing, I kind of graduated to solution-minded. And now I oscillate in between problem-oriented, solution-minded, and this new thing, infinite possibility, which is really like rising above so that you can see that you can make any move. You know, nothing that you choose to do is an obligation. And yet oftentimes we, including myself, feel that way, that, you know, we wind up in situations and then we're like, oh, I have to do this. It's an obligation. No, you don't have to do anything. Anything, by the way. There's consequences to not doing something or doing something, but you don't have to do anything. And just knowing that you have that choice, like I said in the poem, is the thing that can be empowering. You could continue to make the same choice, but if you know that you have the ability to make the choice and that you're making the choice, then you don't feel trapped by these obligations that really don't exist.
Can you think of something recently on a personal level where you made that switch? Because it's an ongoing thing, right? We're always kind of identifying, oh yeah, oh, I convinced myself that I had to do that thing. Is there something in your life that you would feel comfortable sharing where you caught it and you saw that shift?
I mean, dude, this is a choice that I remake every single moment because a part of me could sit in my fucking house forever. You know, I really could. Like, I love just being by myself or being with my girlfriend. And like, you know, I have everything I could ever want. I can explore my imagination. Coming out is scary, man. It's a bunch of crazy people out here, me included. You know, so of course, every single day I have to like remake the decision of going out and exploring the world. And then when I'm doing it or when I've set something up 2 weeks ago, you know, and then the day comes where I'm supposed to do this thing. It's like, literally, I've had this experience where I set something up, right? I'm like, I want to do that in the future. And then it comes and I'm like, oh, I have to do this thing. And you're like, motherfucker, who decided to do this? It was you. You made the decision to set this up. So don't go into it from the standpoint of I have to do this now. Go into it from the standpoint of I get to do this now. And what is here for me? You know, so I don't have anything specific, but I would say everything is something that I have to re-choose how I approach it so that I can fully be present.
You know, you host these workshops. I think one of my buddies, Nirav, who has the office next door.
Love him.
My childhood buddies. And I think you guys get a chance to work together too.
He's fantastic.
Super, super cool guy. He went to one of your workshops. And when you have people coming in who feel an internal calling for creativity. Maybe they're a lawyer, a doctor, they could even love what they do, but there's a missing component of creativity. I identify as somebody like that. I'm a business operator, tried and true. I love building businesses. My business partner is amazing, Dr. Mark Hyman. We do a lot of stuff together. And I can remember part of the inspiration of starting this podcast was I'm in meetings all day long. I love my job. I love the stuff that I do. And I hit this moment where I was like, I actually don't feel like I have a lot of creativity in my life. What do I want to do? Well, I love meeting people. I love asking questions. I love being present with individuals. And I love putting out ideas that help people think of things differently. And I thought, well, I feel this internal calling to want to start a podcast because it helps me and adds a little bit of creativity to my week that even though this podcast maybe takes me less than 5 to 10 hours a week, depending on how many interviews I do, it's added 1,000% more joy into my world.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Because I get a chance to explore that creativity. Mm. You know, I don't run ads on this podcast. I could, right. And there's nothing wrong with hosting ads. I'm lucky that I have businesses that are out there that do well and that I can use them as my primary tool to, you know, earn money and pay my team, etc. But the payment that I get from the creative exploration and the challenge of every week getting prepared for an interview and showing up and doing my best and using a different part of my brain has dramatically changed my life for the better, even though I love my life. So
I just want to say you are an artist, like through and through. And, you know, you might feel like, oh, you're a business entrepreneur, you know, at times. But the way that you do that is so creative. You know, sitting with you and strategizing about business stuff, which we've done in the past, you've been, you know, very generous in that. I'm watching an artist play. And that's why I was saying earlier that we have to change our definition of what art is. Or we don't have to, but I think it's empowering to do so. Because then you can find more and more play within those corners that maybe you're not looking at because it's like, oh, I just do this one thing. And for you to then expand upon that, to create this environment, to explore that, I mean, your joy as a parent, you know, that's why the podcast is successful, is because people can feel that from you, you know, as they're listening. They can feel that you want to do this, that you want to explore these ideas with people that you know, people that you don't know. And that's what's making people lean in.
Thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Appreciate it. So piggybacking off of that, you know, I got there through my own sort of zig and zag, which is always a zig and zag. You host workshops on this.
Yeah.
If the first step is changing what the definition of an artist is, because if somebody doesn't believe it, they can't embrace it, what's the next step from there? How can somebody who's listening at home today begin to step into that play and get started by embracing that artist within?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's similar to what we discussed, which is that if you find something that is moving and meaningful to you, and you create the time and the space, then whatever it is that you're choosing to express through whatever genre it is that you're choosing to express it will start to come through. So if we're talking about poetry, if you choose a moment that changed who you are as a human being, you know, something that really moved the needle for you, and you start to write a piece about that, and you choose something that maybe you wouldn't normally talk about at a dinner party after 10 minutes, you know, something that's charged, then that poem will have that charge, you know? And you just literally have to get out of the way. You have to be the vehicle, but also know that you're the obstacle, and get out of the way so that the poem and the story can express itself through that genre. So that's one thing, you know? Another thing could be, you know, choosing your biggest fear. What is your biggest fear in your life right now? And exploring where it came from and who you would have to be to overcome it and what it would look like and feel like on the opposite side. And choose to explore that through a poem. And then the other part is sharing it with someone, because, you know, the poem is only halfway complete. When you get it out of your system and you can see it as separate from you, that story doesn't have as much power over you. And you actually have some separation. And then when you share it and you're witnessed and you're seen and you're celebrated, then there's some real release and some real integration. And I think you can choose anything, man. You know, you can choose something that lights you up and brings you joy. You can choose something that you're passionate about. You can choose something that, you know, makes you angry. You know, but anything that really charges you is the thing that you should start when creating art.
Seth Godin, the author, said that, you know, back in the 1800s, everybody was a writer.
Yeah.
Because we had to write letters.
Totally.
And there wasn't like, today, are you a writer? Well, I don't have a book, or I don't have this and that. Everybody's a writer. You communicate.
For sure.
And in that same way, okay, there might be some people that want to perform poetry on stage or put it in a book. But really going back to your core message is that everybody has something to say about a charged, a difficult, a fearful, a joyful, a hurtful moment that went through their life. Whether you choose to share it with somebody else or not, that's up to you. but everybody has something to say about something they experienced.
Exactly. And by the way, I want to make this clear. You don't have to get on stage in front of 500 people or 50 people or 5,000 people. You can fucking read it to one person, man. Really, like sit down with a friend, you know, sit down with a partner, sit down with a parent and read your poem to them. And I promise it will open up a space for real and true discussion about not only the poem, where it came from, but how that gets reflected back to the person that's listening and what it makes them think of and what it makes them feel. I mean, when I do the workshops, it's only positive, constructive, curious, passionate feedback. You know, it's not people like judging someone else's poem. Who the fuck wants someone else's judgment on something that you create? Like, that's where the fear of creation comes from. Someone's going to judge that it's not good enough. What does good enough even mean? If it's real, then it's more than good enough. I'd rather listen to like a poem that's like maybe technically not that amazing, but real, than a poem that's like technically amazing, but not actually real, you know? And I've struggled with that within myself, because the more tools I've had in the same way, those tools can use me. So I have to remind myself to come back to what's real.
To me, the takeaway and the theme for the audience that's listening is really like, you have talents and gifts to bring to the world. And sometimes we convince ourselves that it's all been said, it's all been done. So what's our place in this world? What's our place in society? I just had a call before our interview started.
Can I just say one thing? Yes. I wanna hear that, please, but please. I just wanna say, it has all been said and it has all been done, but it hasn't all been said and done by you.
Yes.
You're a fucking miracle, man. I mean, we're here. It's a miracle that we're here. You know, and we have so much to offer the world, but like, we stop ourselves from truly hearing and then expressing what that voice is. And I want to hear what you had to say, but
actually, I want to pause on my story, and I think it's a perfect time to bring in another one of your works from the book, which is called What If?
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind sharing that with the audience?
Yeah, of course. What if? What if Martin Luther King Jr. was into video games? What if Gandhi liked to Netflix and chill? What if Einstein was on Prozac? What if Buddha was too stressed to sit still? What if Mother Teresa counted likes instead of counting hugs? What if Cleopatra was a supermodel who spent her nights in clubs? What if Socrates was a contestant on The Bachelorette? What if Rumi was in advertising? Would I buy his shit? What if Rosa Parks missed the bus and couldn't take a lift? What if Bob Marley popped barbiturates instead of puffing spliffs? What if TMZ had followed JFK? What if Lincoln was a backup center in the NBA? What if John Lennon sang Imagine on American Idol? Would they want to add a beat, get a feature, change the title? What if Muhammad Ali had a reality show? What if I got my house painted by Picasso or Van Gogh? What if Churchill had a podcast or Disney liked to scroll? What if Shakespeare drove an Uber? Would thou knowest I was home? What if Dolly was a DJ or Tupac never rapped? What if Malcolm was your ex or Mandela made the latest app? What if Che Guevara had a clothing line? Or Frida Kahlo made the logos for their marketing team? What if Oscar Wilde wrote scripts for shitty sitcoms? Or Steve Jobs did social media targeting for all your moms? What if Bruce Lee taught Zumba, not Jeet Kune Do? What if he didn't ever do what he was destined to do? What if our heroes aren't demigods to look up to? What if our heroes are our heroes because they're just like me and you? What if I just sit inside this room and wait to die? What if I try to change the world and fail? At least I tried. I could numb myself 100 ways to hypnotize my soul. So much unfulfilled potential, you would think it was my goal. What are you doing with your time? Yours and mine. What if our next genius artist, activist, or inventor grows up to want to be an Instagram influencer? What are you doing with your time? Yours and mine. You don't want to have regrets for all the years you've left behind. And every year that passes, someone's coming up behind. They're here to take your place in a never-ending line. So what's your higher purpose, and is it worth the grind? It's going to take some hard work. You have to burn before you shine. Are your thoughts and your dreams and your actions all aligned? What are you doing with your
beautiful, man.
Thanks, man.
I love that. I think it's self-evident, the meaning and the takeaway for that, but it's always just that we need these reminders, because in this world of input and consumption and the nature of the way that energy is sort of organized today, we do have to be a little bit more diligent in sort of protecting our dream, protecting our goal, and reminding ourselves of who we are. Because if we just fall into the bucket, the ocean of what's happening today, it's easy to make other people's thoughts your own.
Exactly. And that poem specifically, I mean, it's not meant to judge anything. It's actually meant to be provocative. It's meant to make whoever's listening to it just kind of like stop for a moment and think about their own actions and whether or not they're really lighting them up. And if they are, and it matches with that voice, then go even harder, you know? And if it doesn't, then make a shift. And even for me, you know, I'm taking my own medicine, because I'm constantly questioning, do I still want to do poetry? You know, and I give myself the space to have that question, because it allows me to choose it again with more power. You know, I don't want to ever feel like, you know, I'm trapped within these circumstances I've created for myself. And it's a constant practice. And so I think that's what that piece is about as well, is individually, what am I doing with my time? And collectively, what are we doing with our time? Because, you know, this is a crazy time to be alive, man. I mean, we are all in the front row, you know? And I think, interestingly enough, too, like, every generation always thinks the world is going to end, you know, forever probably. Because there's a sense of, like, you know, our mortality is up for grabs. So if we're going to die, you know, the world is probably going to end, because we're so self-important, right? But then again, like, this is a specifically crazy time to be alive. With everything that's going on with climate change, with what's going on politically. And yet I feel grateful to be in the now. There's no other time that I would want to be living. And I want to make sure that I'm using my voice to express the things that are meaningful to me. And that's why there's the whole social and political side of the book as well, because it's not only about me, it's about us. And where are we going as humanity? You know, if aliens arrived, we'd be human beings first, immediately. First fucking flying saucer that would show up, we'd all be like, oh. You know, we'd start to look around at each other, you know?
It's time to unite.
Exactly. And weirdly enough, and unfortunately, climate change has the potential of doing that as well. Because we've actually set ourselves up to where we are all now really in this together. And as it, you know, progresses, we're going to feel that more and more. And it's like, how do we respond to that? Do we devolve, you know, as human consciousness, or do we evolve? You know, do we find that togetherness and unite to make a better world? And, you know, for individuals, it starts inside first.
It's never been a crazier time to be alive, but Never in the history of humanity has a single individual that's not royalty, that's not the king, that's not the queen, have more power to actually make an impact.
For sure.
And that's the beauty of it.
Dude, we don't even have any idea who's listening to this right now. I mean, you know, you have metrics and you'll look, but there's somebody halfway across the world, man, that listens to your podcast and is going to get something every single time they sit down. And we don't even ever know what it is, because we won't be able to quantify the ripples, you know, that come from this technological advancement. And that's why I love that you're putting your heart, your mind, and your voice out there in the world, and you're speaking your truth. Because the more that people do that, and the more that people create, I think, those positive messages for people to explore within and without, the better that we'll all be, you know. And the community that can exist through technology and us seeing that we're not separated, that these fucking nations, climate change doesn't care about our nations. These are imaginary boundaries, man. You know, and they're important, of course. I'm grateful and proud to be an American. I was born here. I have so much opportunity for being born here to be able to create in this system. But, like, it's still fucking imaginary, man. You know, something we all have collectively agreed upon. But there's a deeper thing that we collectively agree upon, which is humanity. And where are we going? You know?
And we all have a role to play in that part.
For sure.
And for anybody who's listening, it's like the reminder is the world needs you.
It does.
Has it all been said and done before? Yes, to go back to what you said. And even still, we need you to say it in the way that only you can. The world needs you to show up and be your highest good, which is living your life, because it matters now more than ever.
More than ever. I got back from India recently, and I had the opportunity to be at a monastery, which was the first monastery that was created. The Dalai Lama created it after he was exiled from Tibet for Buddhism. And so I went there, and they allowed us to spend 5 days on this monastery with them. I was with a group of people. And it was an incredible experience, because the only way that I could describe it, it's like if Easter happened once every 600 years, the significance of this moment for the Buddhist community. And it's because they were celebrating this man named Lama Tsongkhapa, his 600th year ascension, the anniversary of his ascension into Nirvana. And he basically, like, popularized Buddhism. I'm probably going to mess this up, by the way, because I'm just recalling it from what I learned. But, you know, he went across, you know, the world. He taught Buddhism. He wrote scriptures and poetry. And he was one of the main influences on the Dalai Lama. And so we got a chance to be there while they were chanting in the temples for hours and hours. And one of the biggest treats was meeting the Dalai Lama. And I had never met him before. And, you know, he comes in and he, like, sits with our group. And he literally just, like, put his hand up like this. And he said, compassion. And then he started talking from there. But he said compassion like I had never heard it in my entire life. Like, it was like he said the word compassion and I finally understood what its meaning was. You know, so it's not only what you say, it's who is saying it from their life experience, you know, that communicates that deeper meaning. And obviously everything that the Dalai Lama has been through, for him to say the word compassion, it has a deeper meaning. And I took something from that, you know, and I could tell you more about what he said, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that whoever's listening to this, no one can say it like you can say it. There's no one in the world that can say it like you can say it, because no one's been through what you've been through.
Beautiful. Like always, my friend, it just comes back to your name, NQ. People ask you all the time what that means, and you said it comes from inquiry.
Yeah.
And really, inquiry is asking why.
Yeah.
And we are the generation that's actually been allowed for, really, in many societies. I always remember my dad saying, you know, growing up, we just couldn't ask why a lot.
Right.
We couldn't question things. And now we can question things. And you're helping us to do that. and to think like a poet and ask ourselves what matters, what do we want to do, where can we put our attention, how do we want to give back, all the important questions that you have the answers for within. So I want to thank you, my brother, for coming on the podcast and doing just that.
Thank you, man. I'm really, really grateful that you would give me your platform and your time and to have this conversation and to go deep. And you're such a great interviewer. You're such a great conversationalist. And it was really, truly my pleasure and my honor.
The book is out there. People can get it.
The book is out. And I could not be more proud of it. It's so exciting to finally have a home for my art, for all of these pieces that I've created all of these years. So pick it up. Pick it up today. Get
and
Inquire
the art isn't
within.
Just, I mean, the most important thing for sure is the poems and the work that's in there and the storytelling that follows that sort of three-part system you laid up. But it's also, did you guys end up going with illustrations?
Dude, we have an amazing illustrator, this guy named Musta Sharik from England. He's brilliant. And so it kind of has a philosophical Silverstein-esque kind of feeling because there's 50 some odd illustrations and all of the illustrations bring you deeper into the pieces. They were very meticulously created. And so it helps to kind of like tell this deeper story. And the book is made to be able to read it from beginning to end because there is that conceptual through line in the first and second half and in the whole book, but it's also made to be able to pick up and flip to a random page. So it's a really good coffee table book. I honestly could not be more proud of it, as I said. And I'm really, really excited to share it with the world and to allow it to have a life of its own now away from me.
Tell me about the cover real quick and tell our audience about the cover.
Yeah, so I'm not a very like visual person in general. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted for the cover. And my girlfriend and I were flipping through
tarot
cards, exactly. So we were flipping through and I saw this cool image of the tree, you know, and it had the branches and the mirror image of the roots. And it's very, very different than what we ended up going with for the cover, but it was the initial spark of, you know, as above, so below. You know, what we create externally is what's going on inside of ourselves, you know, and really like trying to find an image that represented that. So
what we're looking for from the outside is within.
Exactly. So the cover is the tree with the mirror roots, and then there's a bird that's on the tree, and then there's a bird that's flying away from the tree, and it's Inquire Within in the center. And I ultimately thought, you know, once we created everything the way that it needed to be, it's a really, really beautiful image. And it definitely represents, at least in one split second, what is inside of the book. And I can't wait for people to experience it. And like I said, you know, at the risk of just repeating myself, you know, I wrote these poems for myself, but they're not really complete until I give them away as well. And I've only given them away on stage. I've never actually allowed people to hold my art in their hands and to have their own personal experience and come back to it time and time again. So this is something new for me, and there's a freedom in this. And I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
And I've seen you perform probably over 15 to 18 times at different events. And there was still so much material in the book that I had never... And I remember your stuff that I had never seen, and the experience of reading it through, you know, you sent me an early copy to get some feedback and share some ideas. I would just read things and I would just sit afterwards and it would just kind of like put me in a meditative space. And I would just think, and my brain is going. And one of those was the What If poem, which is why I wanted you to conclude on that. And it's almost like taking a meditation pill. So I want to thank
you, man. That's beautiful.
I want to thank you for that poetry
it.
That creates an experience that leaves people in a container where they can see things from a different perspective.
Dude, thank you, brother.
The book is out. You can find it, Inquire Within. It's on Amazon and all the places that books are sold. And the website is in-q.com. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And people can find you on social. You're probably most active on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram. And that's basically where I'm at.
If you love this podcast, please hit up my dear friend Adam NQ on Instagram. Please check out the book. It's a great gift for somebody that you love in your life. Buy two copies. Adam, thank you for being on the Broken Brain Podcast.
Thank you, Drew. Much love, man. Much love.